We're going to continue our series on the Sermon on the Mount. We've been off of it for a week or so, I think. I'm not sure exactly. I think a week. And I just kind of to refresh our memories, Sermon on the Mount was take place up in the mountain up above to the northwest of the Sea of Galilee. And if you're there in March, it looks about like that. And we're going to go ahead and let's see what we have here. Oh, I was thinking, I wanted to kind of, because I've been having this like recipe for happiness in Sermon on the Mount. So the other day for VBS, we were, all the kids were great, but they're going to talk about camp, which was this week, but I'm going back a week in history. I realize this is a historical event at this point, but we wanted to kind of, for the people who were working, involved, leading, kind of a few of the days we had lunch for people. So the first time on Tuesday, I think we had hot dogs. Then on Thursday, we had hamburgers. And then a friend of ours that's a friend of the chapel, he donated a bunch of beef that we had for our anniversary. We still had some of that left over. So I had this idea, because in Mexico, a lot of times, I've eaten what's called birria. And birria is really good. I guess it's like a dish. I was reading a little bit about it. It's kind of like a favorite dish in Guatemala. I'm sorry, not Guatemala. In Jalisco, which is Guadalajara, is the capital there. And so, anyhow, I kind of had this in my mind that I wanted to make this birria. Now, there was a couple problems. One, I've never made that before. I've only really eaten it a few times. And normally it's made with goat meat. But we had beef. But occasionally it can be made with beef, chicken, goat, lamb, you know. So basically the idea is it's a stewed meat. And then I had this like gigantic piece of meat that's like, I don't know, 15 or 20 pounds of beef. And it wouldn't fit in my pot. Like the biggest pot I had, it wouldn't fit. So then I decided, okay, how are we going to... So then I basically went to the recipe thing, you know. I mean, I don't really know how to do this. So what I ended up doing was I covered it, packed it with garlic salt. Then I took chili powder and gave it a chili powder rub. And then I took, what was the third thing? Oh, cumin. And I smeared that all over it because that kind of has that Mexican flavor to it. So I put that on there, smacked it all down good. I took a chunk about this big, cut it off, and put it into a crock pot. And then I put a little moisture in there. And it was on Thursday. We just had the hamburgers. So then I put it in the oven at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I came back about 6:30, and it wasn't ready. And so I'm like, ee. And it was, you know, it's funny because, like, in the middle, it just kind of looked like it got worse. But then, but actually the recipe said 8 hours, and that was only about 4.5. So be patient, John. But patience is not my middle name. So I just put the lid back on and waited, went over to my office and studied a little bit, did a few things I needed to do. Finally, about 9:45, because I'm not going to wait till actually 10. About 9:45, I go over there and I lifted the lid, and it was like amazing thing had happened. This huge, kind of tough piece of meat had turned into, like, with two forks, I went like that, and ooh, there we go. Somebody's helping me out here. Then with two forks, I touched the pieces, and they all kind of came apart as the muscle groups. And then I took and kind of shredded it up, pulled out anything that didn't look, that I thought Americans might kind of, it's a little yucky because it had like a little tendinous or a little fatty thing. So I kind of cleaned it up, put it in, stirred it up, and filled up two big crock pots full of meat. And then on Friday, everybody ate it. Now, one of the things that I was talking to Monique about, because Monique came over on Friday towards the end of VBS. She was done with her class, and I needed help in the kitchen just prepping the other stuff. Like there were some tortillas and some she dices tomatoes like amazingly. Like I've never seen, like if they would have been cut up by me, they're more like, looked like somebody cut them with an axe. But she had them like all perfect. The onions were all perfect. Everything was just really nice. Anytime you need something cut up, just call Monique. She does a great job. You let her know that, you know. But anyhow, she did fantastic. But we were talking. I said, well, the thing that kind of had me nervous, I was really happy the way it turned out, but the thing that had me nervous is I've never done this before. I don't know how this is going to be. I don't know how this is going to turn out. And I was just hoping. But But I did follow what it said. Okay? And I think one thing about life is no one's ever done it before. Like, you've never lived the part of life you're in before. You've never been, however old you are, whatever the situation you are in right now, you've never done that before. I haven't, you haven't, nobody in this room has. We're all in a new situation every day. And so as we go to the Sermon on the Mount, we need to kind of, as we go to the Sermon on the Mount, we see that what happens is we have to like follow the recipe. Like, life is here. You've never lived it. I don't know what to do. I got this big thing. Throw it in the oven, follow the instructions. You know what? So much of life is just follow the instructions. Just do what it says. Well, I've never done this. I don't know. Well, I never have either. And I've never lived in your situation. We've lived in situations similar to these. And a lot of times we learn and we get better, we grow, and we start getting a more of a varied experiences that we can kind of apply in situations. But normally, what we end up figuring out is that, you know, what the Bible said in the first place was right. So if you don't know, just do what it says. And as you're in your reading of the word, go, you know what, Lord, show me what you have for me. And then let me live that. So we're going to go with this. The first thing today, we're on the section today on Matthew 5, where Jesus talks about kind of marriage / divorce. It was also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. Now, this is again, it's following the same pattern that we've seen. It's slight different variation, but it was also said, because he said, you've heard it said, you've heard this said. Let me adjust this a little bit. It's kind of bothering me. I'm sorry for this little housekeeping chore right here. But it's also said, whoever divorces his wife, let him give her a certificate of divorce. And then he goes on to say, but I say to you that everyone who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Now, one of the things I wanted to discuss here is part of what they had going on at that time was similar to what we kind of have in the United States. It was easy divorce, and families were falling apart, and couples were falling apart, and it was the Jewish Talmud. They had different things that, notice that the divorce was always, this was a lot of the things it says at the time, the rights were always directed towards the man. It doesn't say whoever divorces is her husband. It's whoever divorces his wife. So it was directed, the husband was the one with the right here and the authority. He could divorce his wife, the wife could not divorce him. But he says, but it was a thing where people would divorce over minimal things. Someone in one of the rabbis in their interpretation said, well, I mean, anything that displeases you would be grounds for divorce. So he said, well, like burn the breakfast or, you know, things like that, burn a meal. He had like a list of very trivial items. In other words, pretty much anything you wanted to make it. And Jesus, he goes back to on every one of these, it's really going back to the heart. And it's really going back to, well, here is the heart. And what is the heart? And the heart is, look, God didn't make marriage to end. God made marriage so that, well, for a lot of reasons, but for one thing, for having children, for having a family, for putting a husband and wife together. And I think another element that is huge is the whole point of spiritual growth and growth as a human being. In our situation, when we're married, it's like there's a place where we just grow in ways we can't grow otherwise. One of the biggest things that's going to help you grow in your life, whether you're married or not married, is your interaction with other people. If you interact with people and it's inevitable as you interact with other people that they do things you don't like. I don't know if you've just imagine in your mind a minute, there's ever been anyone that you've ever known that's done something that you didn't like. I think that pretty much covers everybody in the whole room. And in fact, it's really hard to find someone that you've known for any length of time that didn't do something you didn't like at one point or another. And then the question is, well, how do you react and how do you respond? Well, Jesus is saying, look, everyone who divorces his wife, except on the grounds of sexual immorality, makes her commit adultery, etc. But the bottom line is, he says, okay, look, if there was adultery involved, basically, okay. But he's also saying, he doesn't say that you have to divorce because of that. He says, okay. And over in, later on in Matthew, this same question comes up again. And Jesus says a couple other things that I think are relevant here that I want to mention. So I switched the color of the background so you know we're not in the current text. That's a visual clue, as we call those, you know. At Matthew 19, when Jesus had finished these sayings, he went away from Galilee. Remember, the Sermon on the Mount is right above Galilee. And he entered the region of Judea beyond the Jordan, which would be to the east of the Jordan River. Where Rachel Becker is right now. That's the area east of the Jordan. And now it's called the country of Jordan. And so that would be where he was, beyond the Jordan. And large crowds followed him, and he healed them there. And then the Pharisees came to him and tested him by asking, is it lawful to divorce one's wife for any cause? And he answered, have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So he says, look, in the beginning, and he's quoting from Genesis. And he's saying, look, when God made Adam and Eve, and he put them together, and so that they could be married. And so that was the thing. The two become one flesh. This was never meant to be, oh, well, let's tear it apart. It's one flesh. So they were no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. They said to him, why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce and to send her away? He said, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wife, but from the beginning, it was not so. And so he says, look, God understands that we're sinners. And he says, he didn't do this well because, oh, look, you guys are all really growing and in Jesus, and you're seeing all the challenges of life as great opportunities to grow. He goes, no, because your hearts are hard and you wouldn't listen to me. Okay, then, yeah, we'll make a provision. So look, is divorce still an issue today? Obviously, yes. Let me try something else here. This is like falling off. I fixed it, quote unquote, fixed it from last week because it was popping and cracking. So I have a new cord. So it's all clean, clear, and beautiful sound. We're thankful for that. Except I don't have it really adjusted right. I tested it yesterday and it sounded great. But I didn't really test it wearing it. So that's learned point number one. Grow through trials. Okay. So they're no longer two. And so God puts people in our lives so that we'll grow. There's no people in your life that don't do things that eventually irritate you. And honestly, the more interaction and the closer the fellowship, the more opportunities for irritations. And these are also opportunities for God to work in your heart and change you. And I think part of what happens is we look at how our heart is hardened. Let's see what I have here. How we interact. And so let's go to this. We get married. And we think we're in love. We may be. Probably are. You wouldn't get married, right? I mean, that's generally speaking. I know in my case, I remember Mary Lynn and I, we drove to San Diego. We lived in San Luis Obispo, and we were at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo as students. And we had been dating for several years. Then Mary Lynn got saved, and we broke up. Then I got saved, and a few months later, we got back together. And then we decided, well, if we're going to be together, we're going to get married. So then we were going to an InterVarsity Christian Fellowship Bible study at Cal Poly, you know, that was not at Cal Poly itself, but in some with some other students. And then we decided we were going to get married. And then we picked out a date and set up our little budget and figured out all this stuff we're going to do. But we really didn't make any huge announcements. And in fact, at the Bible study, we kind of went with another friend, and the three of us went as friends, and they met us that semester, and we were all just this group of three friends that went to the Bible study. And then about 2 weeks before we got married, we said, oh, yeah, we're getting married in 2 weeks. And he was like, what? Huh? What? Like who? You two? Like seriously? Like, that was kind of the response. It was overwhelmingly positive. And so then we drove down here to San Diego from San Luis Obispo. We did have a car overheat on the way, and I believe a flat tire, but we made it. And we went to Mary Lynn's grandmother's house over in the Kensington area of San Diego. We were going to get married at a church because I had a friend who was going to be the officiant, who was going to do our wedding ceremony. And he had a church, and he said, well, we could use his church in here. But really, the people that came to our wedding were, I had one friend. He was here about a year or so ago, Matthew. He was like my friend from high school. He came with me. And then Mary Lynn had her friend that used to go to the Bible study with us, Mary. And then who's Mary Kelly now, whose husband is Jim Kelly, that's on the school board over here at Grossmont, and then Mary Lynn's younger sister. And so that was our wedding party. We went to Mary Lynn's grandmother's house, and she had this beautiful patio, and then Mary Lynn's grandmother, of course, was there since we were at her house. We didn't tell her, hey, get lost. We're going to do a wedding here at your house, and you can't attend. So she was there, and Mary Lynn had two cousins, I believe, or maybe your aunt and a couple cousins that showed up, and so the ones that lived in San Diego, they all showed up. So then we did our wedding there, and we were really excited and really happy. And you know, it's kind of like you think, and like I say, at that point you think, man, we are so much in love. But now it's 39 years later. I can't even believe, like, people say they're 39 years old trying to, like, live it there. I've been married 39 years. So the thing that happens, though, is 39 years later, I thought I was in love back then. But you know what? You don't even know what love is when you get married. And there's so many opportunities. Look, everybody that interacts with you, look, has the opportunity to bring irritation into your life, except for my wife to me. we just want to make the record clear here. That's what I'm saying. And so, but you know what? Like, there's so many chances to grow. And the closer you are to someone else, the more of an opportunity you have to grow. Because the more you can't really get out of the situation. The more there's something that happens that you don't really like, or you can't really control, or you don't really want to happen, and the more you have to go, God, what do you want? And the more we have, the more we demand that, oh, your role in life is to make me happy, the more difficulties we're going to have, and the harder it is for us to live. Because it doesn't matter who you are, and doesn't matter who you're around, if you're looking to another human being to make you happy, to bring satisfaction, to bring peace, joy, happiness into your life, you can never find it. Because there's only one God. And he's the one that has to bring this. Now, does God bring blessings into your life? Absolutely. Is my wife a huge blessing in my life? Absolutely. Is my wife the center of all happiness in my life? Well, I probably should say yes, but not really. God has to be, right? I can totally appreciate that God brought Mary Lynn into my life. But also, this has been through, like, the first couple years we were married, I'd have a hard time expressing all these things. There were moments, it was very difficult. there's times, but you know what? Part of it's like, you've got to go, wait a second, is this about me and my happiness, or is this about me honoring God? Is this about me seeing how do I serve, and how do I do what God's calling me to do? Or is this about me saying, I got married so that you would make me happy. Well, you know what? You got married for the wrong reason. And you got married for a reason. The problem is that not only is that the wrong reason, that's going to give you wrong conclusion. It's going to take you the wrong way, that you're expecting something that can never really happen. Or are there moments when somebody else makes you happy? Absolutely, and be thankful for that. But another person, no other person. You have children. Hey, you know what? Children, that's going to bring happiness to my life. And it will, to a certain degree. But you know what? The person that brings the most happiness to your life can also bring the most pain to your life. The person that brings the child that just is like a bundle of joy, that's, you know, you're holding the baby in the little arm, and they're looking up at you with little squinty eyes, and they can't really even see you, and you're just so happy about the whole thing, is the same one that later on tells you, no! You say, hey, will you do this? No! And you kind of have to teach them, no, that's not acceptable. And that's okay, because they're only 2.5 at that point. Then they have to learn that. Then they kind of grow up and learn how to be a little kid, and you're all happy, and man, we're good to go. And once in a while, you have to kind of like bring out the little, you know, stinger that helps them learn. And then all of a sudden, then they get to be kind of too big to spank, and they're not really an adult, and they're not really, don't want to be a little kid, and you're realizing, and you know what? You're back to making birria. You have no idea what to do. Like, what? I got this. I got that. What do I do here? You know what? You look to the recipe, man. That's where you go. Figure it out. Look at what God says. You know, it's a process. I want to go, you know, and part of this is going to be on each step of the way, you're learning. Each step of the way. You know, you get married and you think you kind of have it figured out. You don't even know that like somebody says, you think you have the answers. You don't even know the questions. It's like you don't know where you're even starting. And so then you get kids and you, oh, wow. And then when they're a couple months old, I've got it figured out. No, then they change to 4 months old and you've got to figure it out again. And they're 30 and you're still trying to figure it out. And it's been something new every step of the way. And you just, look, all we can do is go, God, you know what? I know you brought my wife into my life for me to grow. There's, you know, the Bible talks about us dying to self and being selfless. There's no place more that you're going to do that than in marriage. There's no place more than you're going to do that than being a parent. And if you're not married, and if you're not a parent, you go, well, John's leaving me out. No, I'm not leaving you out. There's no place more that you can do that than human interaction. And the closer you have human interaction, the more you're going to have to grow. And you're going to have to die to yourself. And you're going to have to go, wow, I can't just bail on every relationship I have. Every place somebody at work doesn't, you know, irritates me. Okay, I'm quitting. Okay, somebody at school doesn't like me. I'll change my schedule. Somebody at this doesn't, I don't like that. I could change. Look, you know what? Part of it's like, okay, if we kind of change our perspective a little bit and go, what's God doing in this situation? What's he trying to teach me? How can I learn? You know, I want to be patient. But you know, the only way you're patient is to have to go through something hard that you want to end and it isn't ending. That's the only way. And so through this whole process, God helps you grow, and he develops you and molds you into the person he wants you to be. Now, I don't think it's a coincidence that first he talks about, you know, you've heard it said about divorce, and then what he says about it. And then the next thing he says is, again, you heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. So he says, you have heard that it was said again. And I think that what happens when you get married, the big difference between married and non-married. I've had some people, hey, marriage is just a piece of paper. Well, not really. There's a good video on, if you ever look at PragerU, I watch those little short videos once in a while, and one of them, it was about marriage, is marriage just a piece of paper? And the guy's like, well, you know, married guys, especially for men, married men tend to work more hours, tend to work harder, tend to work in a way to advance themselves because they have responsibility. Listen, honestly, most guys, and I'm probably, look, I like to consider myself in the group of most guys. Most, you know, there's a statistical term that we throw out there all the time that's called normal. And there's norms, which is covers about 95% of whatever. And I consider myself part of the norm. Maybe I am. In some ways, I'm outside the norm. In other words, I'm abnormal. But that's fine. But one of the things is that if I don't have something real that I'm working for, I don't really like to work that much. Like, there has to be some real purpose to what you're really doing. And yeah, marriage is just the one of the lines the guy says in the thing. He goes, look, marriage may be just, a marriage license may be just a piece of paper, but it may end up being the most valuable piece of paper you've ever had in your life. Because us guys tend to work harder, we tend to work more consistently, we tend to try to advance because we have responsibilities, family, etc. And all of a sudden we have this weight of this responsibility, which we need, and which really generally helps us a lot. We have that on us, and that's a blessing to us. And sometimes we don't really want to see this. One of the things when I moved to the United States after living in Spain, and I had done a few weddings in Spain, but not very many because of the law, the legal system, and all that's a little bit different the way they do things there. But I did a few, and then I got over here, and when I was at the Rock, then there were like the Rock had when I was there, it was like nothing but young people, it seemed like, and they were getting married like this. So they would give there were like, I don't know, 8 or 9 pastors at the time. They would give us each 4 or 5 couples at a time that we were working with to help them get married, you know, preparing them to get married. And so I was doing wedding after wedding after wedding after wedding. So one of the things I looked up, so when I started doing this, I started searching and hunting, like, how to put a wedding ceremony together and the vows and all this. And I came across a line that's in a traditional wedding ceremony that I thought was really pretty interesting. And it was this: I plight thee my troth. Wow, that's interesting. Then my first question is that really English? and then I'm like, well, what does that mean? Plight? I know the word plight as dangerous, difficult, or otherwise unfortunate situation. We must direct our efforts toward relieving the plight of children living in poverty. Okay, plight. Now, how does that even make sense? And then, but there's a second meaning to this, which comes through, they say, either that first one comes through like Latin, I think. Then the second one comes through Dutch or German. And it says plight, a pledge or promise, or to promise solemnly one's faith or loyalty. And so I looked this up because I wanted to try to say. And then the second word, I plight thee my troth. They say troth rhymes with oath. Okay? Troth rhymes with oath. And it's an archaic, formal word that means faith or loyalty when pledged in solemn agreement or undertaking a token of troth, or archaic truth. It could also mean truth. And so basically it's saying, I promise to be faithful or true. That's how you could take that. And I give you my word that I'll be faithful. That's the kind of thought that it is. Although when I read that, I'm like, what? And honestly, I still haven't had an occasion to really use this. So if you're planning on getting married and you'd like to have some, you know, interesting saying that no one will understand in the whole room, except now a few people might, you can try that. There's a saying that says, I think it comes from, I'm not a Lord of the Rings expert, but I got this on a quote that said it was from the Lord of the Rings. So if I'm wrong, you know, all the Lord of the Rings specialists, there's a line that says, I plight thee my troth. And it's meaning I pledge my word. A prince's first responsibility is to his people. And so the idea is, look, this could be applied normally in marriage, is where you see, this is the only place you'll probably see that today. But in archaic language, they used it for whatever you're saying, I'm promised to be faithful, I'm promising to be true, I'm promising to be who I say I'm going to be. And so anyhow, so then Jesus said, but I say to you, because he said, remember, let's go back to, I kind of got off the track here a second, or I got where we might not remember where we were. Let's try this. Again, you've heard that it was said of old, to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn. And then we did our thing about the trough. Let's go there. I could have just jumped ahead. We'll go here. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the king, the city of the great king. And so what these were doing, let me get what I say to you. What they were doing is they kind of had their own little system. You know how when you're a little kid, like they say stuff and then you go, yeah, but I had my fingers crossed. Or yes, I was this, but I didn't say this. And they start like getting real fine definitions of everything. And sometimes that goes for little kids. Sometimes it goes for adults trying to get out of issues. Well, I didn't say this. And that's why contracts are written real finely. And then they're still like, well, it doesn't say this or it doesn't say that. And that's open for interpretation, etc. So they had their guys that they gave. They would say, well, I swear by the throne of God. But that doesn't really mean anything. I have to swear by the gold on the throne of God. Or I swear by the earth. Well, you didn't say, but by the oceans on the earth. You know, they had like, if you didn't say the right formula, it didn't matter. And Jesus is like, no, you guys are just playing with words. Don't do that. And he said, oh, wrong one. And do not take an oath by your head, for you could not make one hair white or black. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. And so he's saying, I think to go back and put it with the marriage part. Look, when you get married, I always ask questions when I do weddings. Do you promise to be faithful in this and this and pledging to be faithful to you for the rest of my life? And then I always tell couples, look, really all you have to do is when I ask you a question, you say, I do. You say, yes. And that's what it is. But really, if you think about it, there's really some major, huge vows, a major, huge oath, major, huge promise is being made. And he's saying, look, let's keep our promises. Now, the thing that I've noticed is as we go through a situation like, I've had people go, well, I'm never going to get divorced because I made a promise. Well, you know what? That's great. And I hope you don't. On the other hand, the issue is really about letting God work in your life and change you and mold you so that you're not just hanging on by your fingernails, but so that you can embrace the situation and understand what love really is and what growth really is and how God brought this person into your life and how even though there's things that you figure out after you're married that you didn't know. I've had people talk to me. I occasionally have people talk to me about their marriages and issues and they're having problems. And well, you know, I didn't know this about them when we got married. Hey, you know what? Nobody knows half of what's there when they get married. You just don't. You can't. It's impossible. But you know what? And you're going to find out some things that are going to be like opening a package and it's like, wow, this is amazing. And I didn't know this. And then you're going to find some stuff that you open and go, oh, this is amazing. And I didn't know this. You know what I mean? And all of this is made and brought into your life so that you can grow. All of it. And if you, and part of it's like, well, I promised this, this, and this. And you know, when we made these promises, there wasn't, you know, we never covered this point. Well, you know, when they say better or worse, it covers a lot of ground. You know, richer, poorer, better, worse, you know, I mean, it really covers a lot of ground. Well, this is, you know, I've had people come to me, well, this is just like so bad and so horrible. Well, did you promise for worse? Yeah. Well, you might be there. You might be there. Maybe. Maybe it'll get worse from here. But you know what? What's God doing in your life? And how is God going to use this? And how? Well, my husband or my wife, they're, you don't understand. I understand. I get it that I don't understand. And I know it's hard. And I know always, listen, I know relationships are hard. It just is. And if we look to ourselves and we look to this other person and we're supposed to have this and we get this kind of imagination thing going that, well, we're going to just, you know, ride off into the sunset and everything's going to be beautiful and come up daisies and, you know, probably not realistic. You know, we have a little baby. Well, this baby, is this going to be the center and make my life so happy and completed and fulfilled? Well, I hope that's true, but it's probably not realistic. And it might be true, but it's also going to happen in a way that you don't expect it to happen. Like, you can have things that are hard, but that's how the hard makes the other, that creates this growth that all of a sudden things go to a better level. And part of it is, there is a place where the promise, the oath, hey, look, I'm going to, if in your heart right now, you make a promise to God, look, I'm going to tell, I'm going to be, show your grace and your mercy and your love in every relationship I have. That means with my friends, with the people I don't really care about. You know, Jesus said, love your enemies. He said, look, it said before, hate your enemies and love your neighbor. It didn't really say hate your enemies. And Jesus says, no, it doesn't say hate your enemies. He says, I say to you, love your enemies. I've had people, well, you know, my husband or my wife, and you know, just, I don't love them. And they're just this and this and this. Hey, you know what? Jesus said, for you to, it says in the Bible to love your wife, love your husband. It says to love your, do they, okay, well, I can't do that. Well, they live in your house, right? That's kind of like neighbors, but like in the same room even. Love your neighbor. Well, you don't know. They're enemies? Okay, Jesus says love them. Like, you don't have an out. Like, there's no like, well, they did this, there's this. No, no, no. Jesus covers all this stuff. And really what it boils down to is, hey, look, how is God going to change my heart and make me into the person I should be? And so much of life is we want to say, people come to me, John, how can I get my wife to do this? Or how can I get my husband to do that? You know what? I our friend Rosa that's the head of Lord of the Harvest, she, a few years ago, she had moved over to Palm Desert where her dad, and was living there at her dad's place. I think she's back. She had another place for a little while, but she was at her dad's place. Her dad was in his 80s, and she was in her 50s, right? And so she calls me up one day. John, I don't know what to do. Oh, well, what's going on? Well, my dad is 80-whatever years old, and he's climbing up on the roof to fix something. And I told him not to, and I can't get him to obey me, basically. I can't get him to listen to what I'm saying. I go, well, Rosa, how old's your dad? I don't know, 86 or whatever he was, you know. And how old are you? Well, she was in her 50s. Well, has he ever obeyed you? Like, when was the last time you told him to do something, he did it just because you told him to? Well, never. That's kind of what I figured. So now you think he's going to start? And I said, you know what, Rosa, remember? Because Rosa's been sick ever since I've met her. I met her in September of 1990, or August of 1997. We both started teaching Spanish at Horizon together. She was one of the first people I met when I moved to San Diego. And she was sick then, and she's just steadily had this something has happened to her where it affected her. She was a missionary in Mexico for 10 years, and somehow it affected her health. And she used to be like the kind of person that would run 5 miles a day and do all this and was always in great shape and ate all perfectly. And then something happened, and she got sick, and she's been sick and tried everything you can imagine ever since then, and she's just been sick. And we prayed for her. She's claimed healing. She's done this. But God's been using her and doing amazing work through her. And so I said, look, Rosa, you're 50 whatever, right? But, you know, remember when you were 23? Yeah. Well, the inside of you that's really Rosa, how different does that feel now, even though you're sick and all this, than you did when you were 23? She goes, it doesn't feel any different. I feel like I could do all this stuff. I just can't. I go, well, you know what? Your dad's 85 or whatever, and you know how you feel like you're 23 on the inside? So does he. Now, if you can't stand seeing him up on the roof, I would suggest you just go in the house. Because you can't change what he's going to do. I don't really see you wrestling him to the ground and keeping him off the roof. But you could say, hey, you know, Dad, I don't think it's a good idea for you to go up on the roof because you are 85, you lost a little balance. He's now in his 90s, and she told me the other day that he said he's not going to go on the roof anymore. That's good. But you know what? When that day when that happened, he went up on the roof, took care of whatever he was going to take care of, and came back down. And so he got this feedback that, what do you mean I can't go on the roof? I totally went on the roof, and I'm fine. You know? And so part of this is she's in the situation where she lives now with her dad, and he is older, and he does have his mindset, and she can't change it. Well, does she then not love her dad? You have situations, look, your husband, your wife, your family member, your cousin, your neighbor, somebody's doing something that you don't like and you want them to change it. But you can't make them. So therefore, I'm going to do whatever. No. What have you said to God? Have you asked God, change me? God, make me into the person you want me to be. He's doing it. He's doing it. Through that stuff. And then you're like, well, but change them. No, no, no. You prayed, God, change me. And he's put something into your life that's going to change you. And it's going to make you a different person. And it's going to change who you are. And I know a lot of, well, I want this, you know, I kind of want to take time for me. And God's saying, here, you want time for you? Boom, here's somebody that's really hard to get along with. Now you get to deal with you. There you go. Deal with you. Because the issues are inside. The issues are inside. And this is where the recipe comes in. You know what? We ask God to change us. God brings things into our life that we want or don't want. And you know what? This is where he starts taking us and molding us. And you know, I always have liked you ever get the like polished stones? The polished stones that are just like glass on the outside and they're so beautiful and you're like, ooh, and it brings out all the colors and everything's perfect. And then you go, wow, how did you make that? Because I never did pick up any stones like that out on the street. Well, you take those same stones, you put them in a thing, you put some grit in there and just spin them for days and days and days. Then when that gets done, you put a little finer grit and spin them some more and more and more. Then you put a little finer, finally get down to pumice and you spin it and spin it and spin it. And then boom, it's fixed. Look at that. You don't hear the rocks going, ow, ow, ooh, please take me. Can we stop it? Please, let's stop this tumbler. I don't like this. But it's kind of nice at the end. It's like, wow, look how shiny and beautiful. How did it get that way? And when you see a life that you see, man, look at God's grace in their life and look at what God's done and look at what God's made in this person's life. Hey, they went through a tumbler for a long time. It always is true. And you start asking them and talking to them, and it's like, wow, God, God takes this and starts cutting and whacking and this and polishing and getting the sandpaper and the file and the chisel. And you know what? It's hard. Oh, God, make me into something. Hey, you know what? And then you go, well, this is too hard. I can't do this. How do you think he's going to make you into something? Well, I can't keep my promise because it's too hard. No, you can keep, just have your yes be yes, your no be no. Try to be clear. Look, are we going to be perfect? No. Are we going to be perfect as a husband? No. Perfect as a wife? No. Perfect as a friend? No. Perfect as a brother? No. Perfect as a sister? No. Perfect as a cousin or relative or coworker? No. But we can try to say yes when we mean yes and no when we mean no. We can try to, with our spouse, appreciate people, love them. And God uses this. As you change, this changes the situation. And so often we think the situation is so horrible and it's because of the other person. But really, if we sit and get ourselves, if we really want to be honest, there's nothing I can do to change it. Yeah, there's something you can do. You learn to be more humble. You learn to see how you can, not to get off the track, but one of the things that was something that God showed me along this line was, I know at times I come home or I'm there, Mary Lynn starts telling me things that are bothering her about whatever. And for a long time, one of the things I had to learn was, she can just kind of say what she thinks. And I don't have to interpret that as an attack on who I am as a human being. I can either take care of it or not take care of it. I can either do something about it or not do something about it. But how I internalize it can be, can I step back from this and not go by how it makes me feel at this moment? That, are you saying I'm inadequate as a human being? Or are you just saying, hey, you know what? Somebody needs to wash the dog. You know, I mean, like, why do I have to interpret this as this? So part of this is, the dog does need to be washed. I'm sorry, I won't be able to get to that. Somebody else can do it. Or I could say, tomorrow I'll do that. Or no, or yes, no, no, whatever it is. But I don't have to take it as a personal attack. And when I can learn that, all of a sudden, all kinds of stuff becomes, hey, cool. Well, what can I do or what can I not do? Let's just do it. But I don't have to take it as an attack. That changed my attitude completely. I don't know what kind of things you're dealing with, but, here's a couple thoughts. Since I had the whole thing about that first part about marriage, I thought, look, marriage is based on a promise. We make these promises in front of our family, our friends, our people that mean something to us, and we come and we say, look, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and we make this in front of everybody. So part of it is I've had people say, well, we got married just between ourselves. That's why, even on your marriage license, you have to have at least one witness. Like, come on, you have to say this at least publicly enough that you got one other person there. That's minimum. They actually put two slots on the California marriage license. So you can just at least have two people sign. You have to have at least one. So you need to say, look, this is at least public enough for one other person to know that we promise this. But it's like, look, we're saying, hey, we're going to be together for better or for worse. And you go through the list, but it really boils down to yes means yes. And I know in a room this size with this many people, there's undoubtedly somebody here who's been divorced. I'm not saying, listen, every single one of these things, nobody's kept all of them. Nobody's done them all. This is just one more of those things. It's like, hey, if you have, then look to the Lord for now. Lord, what do you want to do with my life now? How can you take me from here to where I need to be? When it's difficult in any relationship, trust that God is working. That's how God works. That's when God works. That's what God does to change you into who he wants you to be. It's hard. That's part of life. God takes who you are and he puts you in situations, and part of it's like you learn to deal with it. And part of it's like, okay, what can I change? What can I change? Certain things you can change. How I understand things, what I'm listening, did I pay attention? Did I actually, you know, you're not listening to me while I'm watching a football game. You know what? At least my yes could be yes. You're correct. I'm not listening, but I'll listen in a little while. Okay? That's at least a better answer than, like, paying attention, watching the game. And, I'm listening when everybody knows you're not. And then, look, okay, can we talk about this later? Okay, well, I mean, there's just a million different things you can do. Or, hey, is this so serious I need to, like, stop this and pay attention? There is such a thing as TiVo nowadays, so you can kind of catch up on the game. It's not that big of a deal. Just stop for a minute, pay attention, deal with whatever has to be dealt with, and then let's move on. But don't think, well, so-and-so's this, and they won't listen right this moment. So, like there's a million ways. The issue is, what can I do? Not if we start asking the question, what can that other person do in my life to change so that I'll be happy? You're asking the wrong question. You say, you know what, this is difficult. I'm not really sure what to do. How's God using this? What's God want? God, maybe you can't get an answer like that. Lord, what do you want? What do you want me to do? What should I do? Where do I go? What's the next step? How do I do this? And Jesus knows my purpose. Jesus knows why I'm here. He knows what I'm here for. Why I'm here as a husband. Why I'm here as a pastor. Why I'm here as a brother, as a father, as a grandfather, as a son, as a friend, as a co-worker. He knows what I'm here for. So when I go to him and I deal with somebody that's like hard for me to deal with, God, what is my role here? What is the point of me being in this situation? And how can I make it better? What can I do? I love that verse in Romans that says, as much as lies within you, live at peace with all people. You know what I love about that? As much as lies within you, be at peace with everybody, right? So the idea is, well, you may or may not be able to be at peace with everyone, but for whatever you can do about it, don't throw gasoline on a fire. Well, so-and-so did this, so I'm going to do that. Well, they did this, and I'm going to do that. And, well, you said this, so now I just feel like saying that. We used to listen to these. I don't know how many people ever heard of Mark Lowry. He's like a Christian comedian that's also a singer, and he wrote some Christian songs. But he's kind of mainly does these like stand up comedy Christian things. And he hit the one of his favorite lines that I like is he tells a story about his mother. He says, "My mama." He's like from the South, and he talks like, "My mama, she said she only wanted one thing in life. She didn't want a big house. She didn't want a fancy car. She didn't want a lot of money. She only wanted one thing in life, and that was the last word." And he's like, and I wanted to give it to her. But every time she would say something, something brilliant would pop into my mind, and I'd have to say it back to her. And, you know, like, it's kind of, it does that ever happen? Sometimes you can just let it lay. And even if something brilliant pops into your mind that you should say back, sometimes it might be better just to have yes be yes and no be no, and just stop it. But what's God doing? Who's he turning you into? Who's he making you? All this bubbles over, like who he's making you into bubbles over into all your other relationships. Are you going to be a better friend, a better husband, a better wife, a better father, a better mother, better son, better daughter, better, whatever he's doing, who he's molding you to be, and in all your relationships, it becomes a change in you changes everything also all around you. We're interconnected. We live in a web. And when you change one point, it changes the whole geometry of everything. And let God change you. Recognize, look, you make a promise, keep, do everything possible within your part to live at peace and to keep your promise. Trust that in the middle of when it's hard, when you want to talk to somebody and tell them about how bad things are, remember that the promise included for better or for worse. Most people don't come and talk to me and say, well, I don't know what to do because we're at the best part of our marriage and everything's just wonderful and fantastic. I just don't hear that. I think it's true a lot, but I just don't. People don't come to me for my advice at that point. I get more that when it's on the worst end. But you know what? Jesus knows what he's doing. Jesus knows what he's doing in your life. He knows why he put you together with this person, whether it's in marriage or maybe he's preparing you for marriage by putting some worker right next to the desk next year and you have to deal with it. I don't know. He's got something going in your life. And when you'll accept that and go, Lord, what do you want me to do? What's my next step? He'll do amazing things.